RCR with Paul Brennan. Reality Check Radio.
All right, Wednesday morning, Legal Hub. Take a listen to this.
This is world leading, and privacy is one of the key issues that does need to be addressed. And that's the very reason why there is a one-year implementation period. It's also the very reason why this legislation will contain strong privacy protections. It's also one of the reasons why we have been conducting this age assurance trial. We know that the technologies are developing rapidly, but privacy must be paramount, including that of children. We should also be very clear about the realities. These platforms know about their users in a way that no one else does. We also want to ensure that that technology is one that's capable of being accepted, of implemented, and of being effective. So through our age assurance trial, this will closely inform the implementation. But again, I just want to stress, this is about protecting people. It is about striking the right balance between those protections and privacy. And I want to make very clear to the Australian people that the utmost support needs to be given to young people through implementation of these measures.
So Katie Ashby-Coppins back with us for another Legal Hub on RCR. Who and what were we just listening to, Katie?
So that's Minister of Parliament Michelle Rowland of Australia. She is a communications minister. And look, this is just a bit of a heads up. We have touched on it before, but essentially what's happening is that Australia is looking to establish a law where 16-year-olds and under can't use social media. And of course, in order for that to happen, we're all going to have a digital ID because, you know, you need an ID to go in and buy booze. At a particular age, well, you're going to need ID to go and access your computer. So this is what it's all about. But she's reassuring it's for your safety. And, of course, she's also reassuring people that their privacy will be protected. In the meantime, we can see contracts that are going out for biometrics and the Australian government's tendering to organisations to, see what they can do to supply the services necessary to track and trace all of us again.
So that's how they plan to do it, through biometrics. That's facial recognition or fingerprints or iris scans or something like that. Is that what that means?
That's exactly right. So through some sort of biometrics, they have put it out to tender. So obviously they're still working on that. She's clearly said that, you know, this technology is evolving and all of those things. So, you know, watch this space.
But it's clear. The directionality of it is clear by what she said there. Also, what was that? I didn't pick up the full term, but assurance. Whenever I hear assurance, I think they're trying to sell us again safety, kindness, and all that sort of thing. But it's a masking word, really, isn't it? Masks what it really is.
It really is. And there's a lot of commentary around the fact that, you know, whose assurance is it for? And is it because parents can't do their job anymore, or they can't be trusted to do their job to ensure that their children are learning about social media and behaving appropriately on it? Who are they assuring? Well, I think that they're just assuring. I don't think it's for the assurance of you or me. We can see also a lot of commentary around the fact that digital ID, which is the MyGov equivalent in Australia, is looking to possibly be utilised in order for people to be able to access social media to confirm their age.
One thing I've been curious about, because I don't know too much about the technology, I know what it can do, and that is presumably the biometrics can, especially if it's facial recognition, can determine what the age of a person or the age range. If not, everyone needs to have an ID, don't they? Because how do you know?
Well, that's correct. That's correct. So, you know, we've got those ones, people that are 27 and still get ID'd for booze. Are we going to have a situation where age isn't going to be able to be scanned? This is the problem, though, is it's the link. It's not just the biometrics. It'll be the biometrics to be able to turn on your Instagram or your Facebook page, which will be the scans, effectively like what you've got on your phone. But the thing is it will be the tracking. So not just a scan of your face, but identification of your face to presumably social media comments in the form of, you know, the future censorship that we're anticipating with the Mis and Disinformation Bill, but also, the link, the barcode essentially to who you are digitally online and what you're up to.
I heard someone say just the other day, Katie, that 70% of Australians support this. Do we know that?
Oh, goodness gracious.
As it applied to kids, of course, they're thinking, you know, keep the kids safe. They haven't thought further than that. You can possibly understand why. But, okay, wider question. What's your perception of public support or otherwise for what's happening here?
Look, I'd love to see that number. I haven't seen the numbers of people that are supportive of it, but presumably it's been sold to them on the basis that they're keeping kids safe, which we all want to do. It's just a case of, you know, if in keeping kids safe, how much is that going to extend to us all having to have a digital ID to be able to access social media? Look, I don't know. I'd like to see that number if you can track it down. But I would be surprised if you do let people know what it might be in store and things like that. I think they're going to have a pretty different view pretty quickly if, you know, each time they go to log on to their Instagram or Facebook, they need to give an ID over and above their login details.
Okay, so thin end of the wedge. Can we definitively say that? This is the thin end of the wedge, man.
Yeah, look, I would hope so. I think, though, when you talk to people about this and you know, explain some of the extra reasons, I would hope we would be only dealing with the thin edge of the wedge.
Okay, so that's done and dusted, digital ID.
Look, it came out in 2021 and it's all attached to the e-safety bill. But there's aspects of it which are being trialled and tested at the moment, which is this, you know, age limit to being able to access social media.
When it kicks in, when's that going to be?
Look, it could be as early as next year by the suggestions that have been made.
Yeah.
Certainly the tender has gone out. There's a desire to get onto it quickly. There's already been trials in South Australia. Now they're looking to roll it out, trial it on a grander scheme, and then it looks like the legislation should be amended early next year should there not be sufficient enough pushback.
Anything more to say about this one before we go to the next issue?
No, other than I would just suggest that, you know, if it's happening in Australia, it won't be long till it's happening in New Zealand.
Yeah. I wonder how long. Because if there's a perception from politicians, politics, that there's an advantage in doing this and selling it as keeping the kids safe and outsourcing parental responsibility to the government, then they'll do it, won't they?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It's another form of censorship. And yes, of course.
Yeah.
It's great. We'll just get social media to do it at the same time as they're censoring everybody else. You know,
yeah.
Hunky-dory.
And of course, yeah, they take the biometric data, someone hacks it, and then whoever hacks it owns you.
Yeah, correct.
And there's no rebuilding that. Okay, pandemic treaty not resolved sufficiently for the December special meeting. Two things, that's interesting. But have there been any noises out of WHO following Trump?
Not really, but the time frame around them wanting to push this WHO pandemic treaty to a special meeting in December was because if Trump got in, then he will be coming into power in January, and they're very keen to get the pandemic treaty pushed through as quickly as possible, because once it's signed, there's a very short implementation period, but the important thing is it will take a country 3 years to get out. So they're desperate to get it through. Trump's already making clear comments about the WHO and getting out of the WHO, and certainly not spending any more money in respect of the pandemic fund and the like. So, look, it'll be very interesting to see what shakes out there. But the same reasons for the purpose of the pandemic treaty, or the same underlying basis for the purpose of the pandemic treaty, which is effectively greed, is also the thing that's undone it why they've not been able to achieve resolution. Yep. So you've got a situation where the UK is saying loss of sovereignty, we don't want to have to give away free vaccines, and then the African nations are going, we want free vaccines. So it's kind of the thing that's undone a big aspect of it. But look, they're going back in December. They're hoping to get something out in January. Their mandate, which is the international negotiating body's mandate, exists till May 2025. So they'll keep trying to push it through. They've already been going, what, for 2.5 years now? And they're desperate to get this underway, this pharmaceutical pandemic product sharing agreement, so that they can roll out directives and encourage countries to share pathogens and pandemic potential.
Go looking for them so they can make money out of them.
Correct.
If Trump takes the US out of the WHO, and he said that last term, he was going to do that. I think it got to that. But then we know what happened following that. But now he's back in. That means that we could pull out. I mean, we could do it anyway, but it wouldn't be such a tough thing. We said, well, the US is doing it. I mean,
yeah,
it's so good that they'd still be in. That's a cue to do something, isn't it?
Yeah, look, I think it's it gives the bigger the power, the more people that talk about it, push back against it. Certainly it would be much easier if the US left the WHO for us to also leave the WHO. That's super straightforward.
Because what do we get from them?
It would be much easier.
What do we get from them? Does it make any difference having anything to do with them? I don't know, but it seems to me that probably doesn't to any of us here.
They've stopped being them. They've stopped being a body that recommends things. They're now starting to create, for quite a long time they've been creating some issues. David Bell, who you've had on before, has just done a really good article on, the WHO and the fact that it's not the organisation that it started off and was meant to be. So I encourage people to go and have a look at that. But, you know, things aren't getting better with the WHO's recommendations. We've got hundreds of million additional people that are in severe food insecurity and poverty.
Yeah, what are we doing about them?
Child marriage and sexual slavery is up. 10 million additional girls were put into that and, you know, massive debt. Look, if it was just a recommendation organisation, keep it at that, but it really isn't that anymore.
Yeah. That piece by David Bell is at the Brownstone Institute. Global health reform must go far beyond the WHO is the name of the story if you want to search it out. Okay, but it's a lot tougher, I'm thinking now, for or less manoeuvring room or whatever for the WHO after last Wednesday.
Look, I think so. I think they will be a bit nervous. And certainly the public servants who are the representatives for the United States now with a new administration due early January might be thinking that some of the messaging that they are directed to give may be different.
Yeah, especially with RFK Jr. there. He'll call out everything, won't he? It seems to be that way.
So Robert's got a gig as a SAR, or as CZAR was the role it was described at, not as a cabinet minister, but with an overview on being able to rework health and agriculture. So he will be having a hand in those things. And the WHO, I think, is inextricably linked to a lot of things, such as the CDC and the FDA.
Speaking of CDC, they planned quarantine camps nationwide. What?
Yeah, so this was incredible. So some documents which have recently been released indicated that the CDC had planned quarantine camps across the US. So this is beyond just vaccine passes. This is actual quarantine camps. And these documentations suggest that the CDC had nationwide quarantine camps planned, isolating people, pulling them across from family, you know, giving them only food and cleaning supplies and allowing them to sit out the virus.
Right. So that would be someone who's not vaccinated, wouldn't it?
Look, it doesn't really say that. They're talking about this from as early as 2020 as something. They call it interim operational considerations for implementing the shielding approach. So presumably COVID infected. This was July 2020, so before the vaccines had been rolled out in even the US. So it looks like it was quarantine to stop the spread, but still very curious document to have recently come to light. And more concerningly, we've got the situation where there has been a CDC which has just been established in Australia.
Yeah. And weren't there camps being, I've seen video of camps being put together in Australia some years ago. So they exist, do they? Presumably they're still there.
Yeah, we have a lot of quarantine camps in Australia in most states and territories. And our quarantine camps in states and territories are, often empty, but also we've got a situation where some of them are being utilised for other purposes now, but they've been built and often at huge expense to the taxpayer for use at some stage at a later date. That document we were talking about last week, which was a desire to have a pandemic cooperation agreement between Australia and New Zealand, was citing some of the Australian camps or facilities that had had no infection.
We know it could happen here because we had the MIQ system, which essentially was that. There's not much of a leap to go from that to building camps,
you know,
and stacking people in there.
No.
Yeah, so we've been there before here.
Correct.
All right. This obsession with the next pandemic always seems to be there. Like, you know, there's one.
Well, they've got to pin their hopes on a lot of fear. And this is what David Bell and the University of Leeds Repair Group have been spending a lot of time doing, explaining that the risk of naturally occurring pandemics is actually low.
Yeah.
But we can start seeing in a lot of the commentary now that intentional release is also a term that they use alongside a naturally occurring pandemic. They need almost the human element because naturally occurring pandemics, the risk of them is so incredibly low, particularly with the sanitation that we have now, particularly with, you know, the basic antibiotics and the things like that. Dare I say ivermectin, should we get another influenza type bug, there is, you know, definitely the ability to keep or reduce the risk of a bad or worse pandemic really based at the moment. And that's why, you know, the numbers, and David's very quick to point this out, they actually have to include numbers of disease X, which hasn't existed yet, in their analysis and their assumptions to be able to justify that the next pandemic is just around the corner.
Presumably it's legally okay to just decide to have a quarantine camp. Someone stamps it. Yeah, we can do that. And they build it. Seems to me that it's quite a project, and the connotations should involve public input, I would have thought.
Absolutely. And this is where, you know, you have to hold your elected officials to account. Why are they building this? On whose dime are they building it? What's their purpose? And is it really necessary?
You wonder if the next sort of kind of warfare that's being anticipated is biological warfare. And you're prepping for that. I know it sounds a bit out there, but I mean, people do things for reasons. And if it doesn't make sense one way, maybe it makes sense another.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Biological warfare has always been a massive fear. And it gets, I actually think it probably happens a lot more than what we think it probably does.
Right.
You know, I would, it would be fascinating to know what was the outcome with the viral unit in Ukraine. Whatever happened to that? Who is that fallen under now? And that was very similar to the Wuhan lab. So there's lots of things to wonder about. And I think, you know, bio warfare is just another form of warfare.
All right, just a quickie today. Hope you don't mind because we're sort of stacked up and squeezed up on time this morning, Katie. Thanks for coming in, for beaming in.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me. It's so lovely to be back with you again.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas. From great-looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers and more, the RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.